Today on Wings, the slow process of ending FGM.
That dialogue has to be inclusive. Everybody has to be at the table.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In December 2021, the First Lady of Kenya, Margaret Kenyatta, made headlines around the world by endorsing alternative rites of passage for girls to replace the dangerous custom of FGM. In this program, you will hear from Kenyatta and from activists and researchers who have been working towards this cultural change for more than 40 years. Here's a report aired in the first season of Wings.
In 1985, a joint statement by the Inter-African Committee emerged from the Decade for Women conference in Kenya, asking governments to legislate against sexual mutilation. They also called for national committees to eradicate these practices in their own countries. Producer Addie Gevins was in Nairobi for the UN conference. She interviewed two African women who feel that the tradition of initiation and female bonding, from which circumcision comes, is of more value than the actual circumcision.
I'm circumcised, but till when I was 24 years old, the only thing I knew about female circumcision was what it was about, the clitoris off, and also that it is painful because I see it when they do on my sisters.
Asitan Diallo, a psychologist from Mali in West Africa, is an activist working to stop the practice of female circumcision in her native land. Ritual sexual surgery, often called female circumcision, clitoridectomy, or genital mutilation, affects an estimated 80 million women and girls, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa and in Egypt. Asitan is a pioneer in the scientific and social study of the practice, which was originally an integral part of the initiation ritual in her community.
I did the first survey on female circumcision in French-speaking West Africa. My work was the first one. I interviewed people, and from that I also record something like 200 songs of circumcision. I show how our people express their norms, their rules, their education through songs. What is the meaning of female circumcision in the traditional society? A lot of people are against it, but nobody wants to be an example of marginality. So they will say we are against it, but we will do it.
After thoroughly studying the initiation rituals which used to accompany female sexual surgery, Asitan Diallo concluded that the practice currently has no initiation meaning in her community. But her research has awakened her to the great tradition of female secret societies in African culture. Asitan Diallo is currently working with her friend Stella Ifua Graham, a health worker from Ghana, to encourage African women to discover and preserve some of the fading or discarded parts of their heritage while working to eradicate the practice of female circumcision.
The challenge for African women is for us to look at the positive aspects of our culture and to build upon it. And there are many positive things, like, you know, the secret society. It's an extraordinary power base for women. You have the possibility of women to come together, even women who were excised together as a group, have this bonding effect as like blood sisters for life. I think that when a lot of African women say that what right has anybody to interfere in excision, they are not talking about excision per se. The identity, the bonding, that is what they are talking about. So the challenge will be for us not to say initiation rites are, you know, really backward, but how can we take away the actual cutting of excision without destroying, you know, the woman's power base. Because as a group of women within Secret Society, they can have the power as a group to influence the politics of society. They could come together as a group in a male-dominated society to come up and put pressure on politicians to do something positive for the interest of women. And in fact, all this last decade, the feminist struggle in the West is to get women together, to get the bonding. And already in Africa, we have the bonding, we have the structures. All we need to do is to direct the power of these structures, that they are used constructively, you know, to really support women.
Reporting for Wings, I'm Addie Gevins.
That story aired in 1986 in the first season of Wings. Stella Efua Graham, later known as Efua Dorkanu, published 6 books on FGM. Her first report came out in 1980 under the title Female Circumcision, Excision, and Infibulation: The Facts and Proposals for Change. One of her books was directed at health, education, and social work professionals. Another reported on genital mutilation of girls in Europe and the Western world. She died in 2014, but the work she promoted carried on. In 2019, 12 non-governmental and grassroots organizations came together at the Women Deliver Conference in Vancouver, Canada. They issued a joint press release headed Ending FGMC by 2030, uniting forces to make FGMC a practice of the past. The C in FGMC stands for cutting, an alternative term used by some groups who find mutilation disrespectful of the culture's intent.
Up until maybe a couple years ago, I referred to it as FGM, but I had this revelation that my mother didn't mutilate me.
Naima Dido was born in Kenya to parents from Ethiopia. She is active with Tostan International, a group whose mission includes encouraging communities to abandon genital cutting.
FGM, FGC, was first discussed in Egypt in 1951, long before I was born, before my mother was born. Then 1979, a convention was signed in Khartoum, right, my neighbor, right across the other side. And I was born the year before that, and guess what? I was cut. And my peers, young women my age, are still cutting their daughters today. Something is not working. We're looking for quick fixes, and that's not working. We need to spend time in communities, understand them, gain trust, know why they do the things they do if you want sustainable change, if you want the community to stand with you. And as a survivor, the reason why I do this is because I know my mother didn't do it to harm me. You know, she did it because she loved me. She did it because she wanted a future for me. And again, now I haven't cut my daughter for that very reason, because I want her to have a future. So when activists understand that mothers are not doing this to harm their children, it's rather out of ignorance, out of not understanding, out of the lack of conversation within communities, be that spark that starts productive conversations. Don't demean people. There's no mother that wants to harm her child, not even prick a finger. We demonize African mothers. What about the American mothers that cut their sons? How's that different? Okay. So we have to work with compassion, okay, and understanding, and try to understand where that person has been. And without that, it's going to be combative, it's going to be fighting, and you're not going to get anywhere. Now, the responsibility on all of us in this room, we're here for a reason. Something pulled us to this room. It's our responsibility to go out there and create conditions where we can spark opportunities for conversation and dialogue amongst activists, amongst survivors, and amongst communities. Without dialogue, we're not going to get anywhere. And that dialogue has to be inclusive. Everybody has to be at the table. We have to create the space for everybody. It is our responsibility. And if this goes on, the fact that we're all in this room talking about this, if we come back and continually talking about this, we're not doing our job.
The process of cultural change used by Tostan International is no quick fix, Naima Ditto explains.
Okay, we don't go in for a week, for a day. No, we're there. And it's important, and a lot of my fellow sisters are in the audience. We go back to the communities that we understand the most, the communities that are our own, and we know why they do this. And that's exactly what Tostan does. It sends in people from the same ethnic groups into the community. So you're not looking at your neighboring ethnic group. You're looking at somebody that looks like you, that sounds like you, that understands the practice from your perspective. And what Tostan does is, the process takes time, 3 years. It's a 3-year long conversation for people to land at their own conclusion.
Naima Ditto shared the stage at Women Deliver with Imam Muhammad Sharif Diop, program coordinator at Tostan Senegal, and a specialist in Islamic rights and child protection. He addressed the assembled at length in French. Moderator Aya Chebi gave this summary of his message.
Par exemple, j'abandonne l'excision qui était, on l'a dit ici, une forme d'initiation. Je vais mettre à la place l'éducation, l'inscription et le maintien des filles à l'école. Donc l'éducation.
Merci, Imam. On doit terminer. Mais merci beaucoup pour l'intervention. I just let him go on. I know we run off time, but it's not every day that we have a religious leader perspective on this issue, and especially someone who is on our side of the fight. Yeah. I think what I got, the message that I got really is to talk to people you disagree with. And this is an exercise we did even in Tunisia when we were writing the constitution, and we would talk to the Islamist party about gender equality. And if you do not do that job and talk to people you disagree with, who would take religion as a justification to inequality, then we would not be able to make the change.
On Wings, the topic is female genital cutting and efforts to end it. Jacinta Muteshi also spoke at the Women Deliver Conference in 2019. She has conducted research for major organizations including CARE and the Population Council. In her talk at Women Deliver, she described factors that prompt changes in this practice, if not complete eradication.
I'm a senior associate at Population Council, and the work I'm going to present or share with you is really the work of very many individuals. This research work began in March of 2015, and it was the first time in the longest time that we saw a huge investment in undertaking research around FGMC. So the research work is currently a global work, and it's work being undertaken in Egypt, Ethiopia, Somaliland, Kenya, Sudan, Nigeria, Senegal, and recently in Burkina Faso. But I'm going to share work from just 4 countries, Kenya, Somalia, Senegal, and the Gambia, because they help highlight some of the emerging important questions that can have us learn from what we are doing in the field. We have countries where we're seeing marked decline. There are countries where we're seeing no change in prevalence. There are countries where we're seeing a minimal decline in prevalence. We are beginning to recognize, or have recognized for the longest time, that there are some really important gaps in our understanding of where FGMC is practiced, where it is declining, how that has been achieved in terms of its decline, where we're not seeing any change and why, but also that there is change, but what is the nature of that change, and that change that is not leading to decline. So we are looking at the significance and importance of the norms that underpin FGMC, and we are framing this in a way that highlights that these norms are being contested, that these norms, some of them are suggesting that they're changing, and that in some contexts they are, in fact, being sustained. And why? What does it look like when you look at each country? So that first slide, for example, to pick Kenya, shows remarkable decline. but a more closer look shows that there are regions or areas which still have universal practice. But when we look more closely and begin to seek to describe such factors, we may begin to see that groups we took for granted that practice FGM have over time either changed the practice, or because they've moved into locations where other ethnic groups live, alter the practice, or stop the practice. So as you begin to think about what is producing high or declining rates, you need to look more closely at these socioeconomic demographic factors. Yesterday in one of the presentations, there was a panelist who said, but education, for example, doesn't make much of a difference with regards to cutting in our country. That doesn't matter whether you're well-educated or there is no education, that cutting remains the same. But that is that context. In other contexts, education has in fact made a difference. So we need to always be aware of the contextual factors when we begin to think about what will our intervening look like. So what are we finding? We're finding changes that sustain FGMC practice. So changes that are sustaining the practice, because we always assume change means that the practice is ending, but no, there is change that in fact continues the practice. And it's a response to some of the interventions we have. So our interventions, for example, that have been very successful, such as health messaging, have had adverse responses. We see a change in the type of cut. For example, in Somaliland, where we've undertaken this work, the shift from pharaonic to sunnah. Note that I put it in quotation marks, because that language can be debated. So I'm putting it in quotation marks for purposes of our discussion. So pharaonic in the sense of type 3, changing to sunnah. But what is sunnah? See, we don't know what sunnah is, but we know that there is such a discussion that communities in Somaliland have moved, and not all communities. I need to highlight that this finding is for urban areas. So why? As a response to probably the kinds of powerful health messagings that have been very successful. And we look also, we find increased medicalization and reduced age at cutting in Somaliland and Kenya. So medicalization is increasing, but most cutting still continues to be undertaken by traditional cutters. We're seeing changes also in the way FGM is being conducted, moving from the public space to more highly secretive events. That example is from Kenya and Senegal. But again, as we heard from a presenter yesterday, there are communities still for which this remains a highly public event. There is changes in cutting locations, moving more to the home. Communities where cutting is a means by which it's a coming of age, we see changes there too with regards to celebrations being dropped. And why? A response to the criminalizing of FGMC. So changes that sustain the practice. We're also seeing alterations in the norm itself. We often hear this discourse that FGMC is a means by which we uphold in certain communities morality and fidelity, reduce sexual desire, and also aiding in marital, or at least reducing marital instability. But we've also begun to see something that challenges this norm, using examples from the Abakusi in Kenya, where it has been shared with us that the cut has not prevented girls from engaging in sexual activity from a very young age. Another important finding is that FGMC is also a strategy for assessing social capital. This example is particularly from Senegal, and again stressing the need to be context specific in the reasons that continue to powerfully rationalize the practice. In this case, cut women maximize their social capital by excluding women who are uncut. FGMC serves as a signal that girls have been taught the art of subordination, and this is in fact the power lies in whether you are able to enter more peer groups or women peer groups, or enter the intergenerational sort of contexts where women are defined as having power in their communities. So in this case, this is an important finding for us from the context of Senegal. Something is also changing in certain contexts, that FGMC is not a prerequisite for marriage. And that may be given modernity, given the fact that communities are mixing and learning from each other, or new ideas are beginning to happen, that maybe there are other multiplicity of reasons as to why FGMC continues, and marriage may not be one of those. It may be one of those reasons, but no longer the only reason why this may be the case. So the lack of large-scale abandonment does not mean that the practice is unchanging, static, or deeply rooted. That indeed we are seeing changes and variations in norms that are associated with FGMC and the way in which FGMC is being carried out. And people are adopting changes as they try to manage risk.
Jacinta Muteshi speaking about her work with the Population Council at Women Deliver in 2019. Economics also helps perpetuate female genital cutting. Traditional cutters earn from this trade, and medical doctors are paid for clitoridectomies too. The same counties in Kenya where FGMC has remained most prevalent are also highly economically challenged. But these are areas where women have long-standing traditions of beadwork. In December 2021, the First Lady of Kenya gave her blessing to the Johari Bead Initiative, which provides economic potential for women and also is to be a testing ground for a new initiation process for girls.
It gives me great pleasure to join you and participate in today's event, the launch of the Market Scope Study and Johari Beads business model. This business initiative has the potential to significantly empower our women from the pastoral communities. I see it as a major step towards the agenda of the government to eliminate female genital mutilation. When His Excellency the President was launching Johari, he made a commitment to put an end to female genital mutilation in Kenya. This is in recognition that FGM has been a major bottleneck to the advancement of women in this country. FGM poses long-term health risks to young women and often leads to school dropout and early marriages, compromising the opportunities for social and economic advancement of the affected girls. To achieve gender equality as required by our Constitution 2010 and ensure that Kenyan women realize their full potential, we must end FGM. It's gratifying to note that the Johari bead bracelet, launched about 2.5 years ago, has blossomed into a major transformative program. Its principal objective is to empower women and girls from pastoral communities by supporting them to use their bead-making skills to earn an income using the adornment from the beads to symbolize the transition to womanhood. Johari beads have become an emblem of the eradication of FGM. More importantly, they have become a key source of income for women in the 7 counties where this cultural practice is most prevalent: West Pokot, Baringo, Samburu, Turkana, Narok, Marsabit, and Kajiado. I'm also pleased to note that this program has reached over 5,500 women and helped women entrepreneurs to establish 60 cooperative societies. The study we're launching today proposes to build on this effort and commercialize the Johari Beads Initiative as a fair trade enterprise that could operate as a social enterprise under the World Fair Trade Organization. This is an excellent idea, which I believe will boost the economic returns from the initiative and make it a sustainable business. I urge the State Department of Culture and Heritage and Gender and the State Department of Trade, Enterprise and Development to translate this aspiration into a reality. linking this important social enterprise with wider markets and opportunities at the regional and global level. I would expect the discussion to address challenges facing small and medium enterprises and come up with measures to curb the threat of fake imports and to strengthen the value chain. Further, I urge you to come up with a scale-up program to enhance the capacities and skills of the women engaged in bead making to ensure that their products and labor markets remain competitive. I'm also pleased with the proposal made in the study to replace FGM with a formal alternative rite of passage. A key objective of the government's anti-FGM campaign has been to preserve elements of the cultural practice that are considered valuable and to eliminate those that are harmful. The proposal to take girls through a 15-day initiation program comprising of sessions on mentorship into adulthood, healthy relationships, life skills training, basic home economics, and the art of bead making is welcome and a way forward. I encourage the State Department of Culture and Heritage and the State Department of Gender to embrace this proposal and structure it into a key national event that celebrates and puts a spotlight on the successes the government has made in its anti-FGM campaign. Women are the backbone of our families and communities, and the impact of their involvement in nation building can be transformational. This is why the Kenya government has committed to deliver on its promise to women in pastoral communities to end FGM. The success of the anti-FGM campaign will require more than just the government. We need all Kenyans to work in partnership with the government to drive this noble agenda. I invite all Kenyans to join hands with the government in this effort. I also appeal to Kenyans in the diaspora to become our ambassadors for Buy Kenya, Build Kenya. Promote the talent of our entrepreneurs and the locally made products. I strongly encourage our elders as the custodians of culture and those who support them, including youth and women organizations, development partners, civil society, and religious organizations, to maintain this strong momentum towards eliminating FGM. We owe it to our women and girls.
Margaret Kenyatta, First Lady of Kenya. Her endorsement of alternative initiation for girls made headlines around the world. President Kenyatta previously set 2022 as his deadline for ending FGM in Kenya. Organizations from around the world have said their goal is 2030. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. We are also Wings Radio on Facebook. Wings thanks your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, host of ongoing events at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's maternalgifteconomymovement, all one word, .org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Wings series producer, Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.